Grammar Girl here. I'm Mignon Fogarty, and you can think of me as your friendly guide to the English language. Writing, history, rules, and cool stuff. Today, I have a segment by Edwin Battistella that goes beyond the idea of a house style guide that we talked about a couple of months ago. And I also have a Familect story and a summary of an interesting linguistic study. Let's get started. I'm going to make a lot of money, and I'll hire someone to do all my writing for me. That was the rationale offered by a student many years ago for why he shouldn't have to take a required writing course. A snarky comment crossed my mind, but instead I mentioned to him that if he had to hire someone to ghostwrite everything he'd have to write in his life, it could cost him a small fortune. The idea that there was more to writing than college term papers seemed to satisfy him. For me, it raised a new concern. Just how do we help people write effectively about so many things, about practically anything? Whether it's a resume, catalog copy for chocolate or flowers, a profile of a scientist, an endorsement of a political candidate, a safety manual, or a user's guide, the key is to find some good models and study the rhetorical moves that other writers make. Rhetorical moves is a term introduced by linguist John Swales, and it refers to the different steps that a writer makes in constructing a text in a given genre. A bit like the standard opening strategies of a chess game. Swales originally pursued the idea of rhetorical moves to analyze academic research writing, with its steps of establishing a territory, a niche, and a claim. But the idea of analyzing a genre of writing into a set of purposeful steps can be, and has been, fruitful beyond the domain of research writing. For someone aiming to be a general-purpose professional writer, it pays to create a personal guide to different types of writing. When you find a piece of writing that you think is especially effective, sketch out its structure, move by move. Doing this doesn't require hours of pondering or a PhD. It can be a quick sketch, like what I'll describe next, that captures the shape of many an opinion essay. 1. Describe what many people think about an idea in the news. 2. Introduce a new perspective that suggests there's more to this. 3. Offer a quote or two from an expert or a relevant personal anecdote about the new perspective. And 4. Sum up by explaining what we should do next. This bare-bones skeleton of 4 moves, conventional wisdom, a new insight, expertise, and a call to action, leaves plenty of room for a writer to personalize an opinion essay. The rhetorical moves are a skeleton, not a straitjacket. Here's another example. A personal profile might have a structure like this. 1. Tell who the person is and why they're significant. 2. Provide a chronology of relevant life events. 3. Interpret the person's accomplishments and challenges with quotations. And 4. Include a telling, final detail or fact about them that brings it all together. The profile format can be adapted further to application essays or even obituaries, or to a description of an organization or business. Try looking for rhetorical moves with models of your own choosing. Food, movie, and book reviews, for example. Resume or cover letters, and solicitations or complaints. Soon, rhetorical moves will be cropping up everywhere you look. Analyzing the rhetorical moves of your favorite bits of prose has another benefit. You'll quickly become comfortable enough with the rhetorical moves to begin to adapt and play with them. You might, for example, open a profile without identifying the subject directly, letting the readers guess the identity at first. Or you might write an opinion piece that ends by lamenting rather than calling to action. Being able to write anything at all is an exercise in reading for rhetorical moves and then adapting and extending those moves. With some practice and time, you'll have an all-purpose rhetorical toolbox that'll enable you to meet deadlines, communicate without fear, grow as a writer, and have fun writing. And think of all the money you'll save by doing it yourself. That segment was written by Edwin L. Battistella and originally appeared on the OUP blog. Battistella teaches linguistics and writing at Southern Oregon University in Ashland, where he's served as a dean and as interim provost. He's the author of Do You Make These Mistakes in English?, Bad Language, and The Logic of Markedness.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.
Finally, I have a Familect story from Wendy.
Hi, Mignon. My name's Wendy, and I'm an 8th grade language arts teacher, which is why I love your program. But I have a Familect story for you. We have a now 20-year-old cognitively disabled son who, back when he was very little, would call steak bites snake bites, probably because that was just what he connected with the word snake instead of steak. Okay, bye.
Thanks, Wendy. Your story reminded me of a fascinating linguistic study I saw a couple of weeks ago on the Scientific American blog. It's apparently known that language can affect what you look at. For example, in eye tracking studies, people who hear the word candle will often look at candy because the two words share the same first syllable. But it gets even more interesting because bilingual speakers are influenced by both their languages. For example, the researchers found that when people who speak both Russian and English hear the English word for marker, their eyes are drawn to a picture of a stamp placed among other images because the Russian word for stamp is marka. And what completely blew my mind, although maybe it shouldn't have, is that it also holds true for sign language. So people who know both English and American Sign Language, quote, look at cheese when they hear the English word for paper, because cheese and paper share three of the four sign components in American Sign Language, unquote. If you want to read more, that article is by Viorica Marion on the Scientific American blog and called The Language You Speak Influences Where Your Attention Goes. And Wendy's Familect story made me wonder whether her son would look at a picture of a snake if you talked about steak bites. In all the examples except sign language, the words seem to share the same first syllable, so I'm actually not sure. But it does seem within the realm of possibility that it would work with snake and steak. If you want to share your Familect story, the story of a word or sign your family and only your family uses, leave a voicemail at 833-214-GIRL, like Wendy did, and you might hear it on the show. I'm Mignon Fogarty, author of the New York Times bestseller, Grammar Girl's Quick and Dirty Tips for Better Writing. You can find me at the home of my podcast network, quickanddirtytips.com. Thank you to my producer, Nathan Sims. That's all. Thanks for listening.